This is John Floridis. Welcome to the Monday Music Special. Tonight we feature an hour-long special edition Musicians Spotlight with Lyle Lovett and Robert Earl Keane. Guest host Michael Marsalek, the original host and creator of the program, visits with the two iconic Texas singer-songwriters to talk about their decades-long, award-winning careers, as well as their lifelong friendship.
You're listening to Musician Spotlight on Montana Public Radio. I'm Michael Marsalek, the guest host for this evening. I've got a couple fabulous guests with me in our Missoula studios today. Robert Earl Keane is here. Robert is a wonderful Texas songwriter and musician, plays in lots of different genres, Americana and folk and country and bluegrass and rock and roll. He's in the Texas Heritage Songwriters Hall of Fame in 2012, along with Lyle Lovett. Lyle Lovett is here as well, as the two are traveling together and touring currently. Lyle is a musician and actor, 4 Grammy Awards, including for Best Male Vocalist and Best Country Album. And between you, I looked up, Lyle, you've got at least, 11 studio albums, another few with the live and compilation records, and many singles and songs, and Robert, 7 live albums, and more than a dozen studio albums, including the Bluegrass Sessions, A Happy Prisoner record from 2015, which I just love the fact that it charted on the indie charts, the folk charts, the grass charts, and the country charts. So great to have you guys here. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for having us.
Let me just ask you to start by talking a little bit about the background, because if I understand right, you guys went to college around the same time, Texas, kind of came up and have known each other for a long time. Have you always been friends throughout this career story that you've had?
Well, yes. I mean, we are yes. Friends. We met in 1976. We both were in school at Texas A&M. Robert was studying English, and I was in the journalism department. And we were, two of 3 or 4 students in the College of Liberal Arts in those days at Texas A&M.
Much smaller then, huh?
It really was. I exaggerate, but the College of Liberal Arts was one of the smaller colleges at the university, and so we had a natural kinship just from our studies.
There's a connection to Texas that's always been part of both of your careers, and maybe I'll just have you each kind of answer this question. Something about place has always been an important part of your stories as songwriters and seems to have really contributed to kind of how you look at the world and how you think about things. And I think people talk about the Texas sound or the Texas feel. How do you describe, maybe I'll start with you, Robert, what being from where you're from and place has contributed to you as a songwriter?
I'm very visual in my thinking when I write a song, and so I start out with some sort of setting, usually something that I either remember that had some impact. It could be anywhere from sitting by a pond fishing to walking down a road, or it might even be just like what I'm looking at the time. I have a place where I write a lot of songs that up on a hill, and I sit there and I just sort of, I feel like the way to construct a song that has some kind of narrative value is usually to create some kind of setting. So I'm very setting oriented, and I'm also very visual oriented. So the setting itself is probably as important to me as anything else.
I think of you, Lyle, as somebody who in your songwriting there's a sense of longing in some of the songs that you've written. And I also think that you're one of those that kind of looks at the human condition, and whether it's a kind of a comedic twist or a heartfelt twist or, a love story twist, that there's always something, connected directly to the human condition. That's what songs can do so well. Do you think about the eventuality of who you're creating these songs for? How do they come to you in that way?
Oh gosh, I'm not really creating songs for. I'm trying to figure out my own thinking, trying to write songs that reflect in an honest way my own experience and my own feelings, as a person in the world. And my hope is that if I can do that in an honest enough way, maybe maybe, I mean, if there's a reason to listen to one of my songs at all, maybe it's because somebody can see a similar experience in his or her own life in one of those songs.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, yeah, I'm, you know, I'm just trying, I feel like writing a song for the most part is trying to sort through just what I, you know, what I might be going through or dealing with. It's, mm-hmm. It's, you know, that basic.
Well, you're both very prolific at writing songs and kind of connecting in that way. I read, Robert, that you described sometimes it seems like songs just fall out of you or, mm-hmm. But there's an authenticity in your writing, I think, that seems like you're somehow pretty good at capturing a moment in time or a feeling or can you talk about that part of the craft of kind of how does that happen for you? It's so fascinating.
Well, once again, it starts with some kind of setting. For instance, a song that people like that I know that they like, Feeling Good Again on one of my records is really all set in this bar room in Bandera, Texas. That it's a basement bar room, which is unusual. There's not really any basements in the state of Texas, so it's unusual. And I lived in that town, and I spent some time in that bar, and I was friends with the guy who owned it. It's called Arky Blue's Silver Dollar Saloon, and I started, you know, creating that setting basically, and then really how the song progressed, I couldn't really tell you why it progressed that way, but in the end, it's like everything, I was thinking in terms of everything that I liked about that place and how it made me feel and how, you know, there's my friends and people that I know and all the excitement. And then in the very end, my wife, the character in there comes in the thing and sort of makes it, you know, just completely makes the whole world of that little world perfect and complete.
That's amazing when it works as well as it does when, you know, in that 3, 4, 5, 6 minute moment that you're able to capture a feeling so well and go and to really take people to a place. I love that about music and that, especially about your writing.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, when you write a song like that regardless if somebody's been there or not, they have some similar experience and that's why it connects with them.
I have a question. Did you know the ending of that song, of Feeling Good Again, when you started writing it?
No, I didn't. I just wrote it and put all those pieces together, and then it made sense to me that what would be the most perfect thing is the, you know, the person that you love the most shows up.
You found that, though, as you were inside the song.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that I really enjoy. I mean, when you talk about crafting a song or writing a song, you make it sound, you know, maybe more deliberate than it is sometimes. And I think some songs are more crafted. I think some songs sort of, you know, reveal themselves in different ways. But oftentimes, the process of writing, being inside the song as you're trying to figure out the next line takes you places that you wouldn't have thought you'd go.
Standing out on Main Street across Mr. Blues, my faded leather jacket, my weathered brogan shoes. The north wind was blowing, but the spring was coming on. So I wondered to myself just how long I'd been gone. So I strolled across on Main Street, walked down a flight of stairs, stepped to the hall and saw all my friends were there. And the ice I was flashing, welcome, come on in, it feels so good, feeling good again. My favorite band was playing an Otis Redding song. Sang the chorus, everybody sang along. Dan and Margarita were swaying side by side. I heard they were divorcing, but I guess I let it slide. And I wished I had some money with which to buy around. I wish I cashed my paycheck before I came to town. so good, feeling good again. There's old man Perkins sitting on a stool, watching Butch and Jimmy John talking loud and playing pool. The boys from Silver City were standing by the fire, singing like they thought they were the Tabernacle Choir. And I wanted you to see them all, I wish that you were there. I looked across the room, saw you standing on the stair. And when I caught your eye, I saw you break into a grin. It feels so good, feeling good again. There. I looked across the room, saw you standing on the stair. And when I caught your eye, I saw you break into a grin. It feels so good, feeling good again. It feels so good, feeling good again.
Driving down West Texas highway, I seen a hitchhiker with his thumb pointing my way. He didn't look suspicious, he didn't look any too clean. So I put on my brakes and I opened up the door. Could tell it was a bum by the that he wore. He said, I'm going down to Haskell, got a woman back in Abilene. He told me, son, East Texas is where I come from. I've been riding that Jacksonville rodeo and I got humdrum. I'm traveling around a whole lot of Texas I've seen. Yes, and I'm mighty glad you was pushing out my way. Your fancy clothes and this shiny Chevrolet. Said I'm going down to Haskell, got a woman back in Abilene. Like a possum, a mighty happy rascal. He waved goodbye when I let him out at Haskell. And that's about the last of that road trip that I've ever seen. But you know that I'm still wishing to this very day had my clothes in his shiny Chevrolet. It was me going to Haskell with a woman back in Abilene. But you know that I'm still wishing to this very day he had my clothes in his big Chevrolet. And it was me going to Haskell with a woman back in Abilene.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to the Monday Music Special. This week, it's an hour-long special edition Musicians Spotlight with guest host Michael Marsalek, featuring Lyle Lovett and Robert Earl Keen.
I have a question for you, Lyle. In playing with so many different configurations, lots of collaborations, lots of other musicians and vocalists, the large band, which is, what, 14 players that you've toured with regularly, and, you know, something stripped down where it's a couple guys like you're doing now. When you're writing music, where does the arranger kick in? Where does the thought of what could happen with a song and how it could expand? Or, you know, do you think of these amazing musicians that you have that are playing with you regularly? I suppose this would hold true for your band too, Robert, but maybe answer that first, Lyle. Where does the arranger kick in, and does that at all come into the process? And if so, where?
Well, it certainly does. And before I started playing with the wonderful musicians I get to work with, I didn't think that way. But after all these years of working with Russ Kunkel on drums and Victor Krause on bass and Matt Rawlings on piano, I can't help but think about, you know, certainly I've made up songs just to do a band arrangement with the song, and so it's an expanding quality that they bring to my thinking. They allow me to think in ways that when I first started playing and singing, I couldn't imagine.
Mm-hmm. Robert, how about for you? Where does the band that you've worked with for more than 20 years? Mm-hmm. Come into the songwriting process, or even just where do you start to think of them as an arranger, and where they've influenced you and vice versa?
I have players that I like the way they play. For instance, the man who plays the steel guitar, Marty Muse. When I first started playing with him, I had him on a record. I called him up and had him come in on record. And so we were trying to figure out this one sort of musical thing to boost the lyric there and the feeling that the lyric should provoke. And I told Marty says, "Well, what do you want?" And I said, "I want purple clouds, Marty." And he says, "I can do that." I said, "Great. You're exactly the person I want to work with." And, you know, there were purple clouds, you know, just this great, beautiful sound coming out of that steel guitar. And then, you know, more recently, there's a song that I've played for a long time that was on a bigger piece of Sky called "So I Can Take My Rest." And it's a nice sort of a good ending song, but it also has a little bit more than that. It's just sort of somewhat kind of a tranquility feel to it. And it has sort of a repeating sound throughout. And I have a couple of other guys that have been playing with me now that play the violin and the mandolin, and so we get to the end of it, and it has this long outro, and I told those guys what this needs to do is sort of break out of this sort of tranquility thing and sort of open up, as if you all of a sudden opened a brand new door musically. And that just came from years of playing that same song and realizing what would really open this song up would be just this other little musical piece that does that. So those things come through not just inspiration, but somewhat incubation, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly, and I mean, conversely, you write a song that you think might be a quiet solo type song, and then it falls into the hands of capable musicians and singers, and all of a sudden it takes on a life that you could never have imagined when you first made it up.
You're listening to Musician Spotlight on Montana Public Radio. I'm Michael Marsalek, the guest host for today. I've got Lyle Lovett here and Robert Earl Keen. The host of the program, John Florida, sent me a couple of questions, and this will be a kind of a perfect segue into what you're currently doing. John asked the question, you know, what it's like to inhabit each other's music, perform each other's songs, to share in a collaborative way this way. And I would add maybe just the detail of how different it is to have a kind of an intimate setting where you're able to do your songs stripped down a little bit more, share that way. And from what I've heard, this tour could be called the Texas Storytellers Tour, because you guys have been telling stories like crazy as well, right?
There's a lot of talking.
So what's it like to do a collaborative effort like this?
Go ahead, Rob.
For me, it's just a complete release, because there's a certain amount of of boundaries that you have to do within your own band and taking care of all that and those sounds. And here, and especially because Lyle and I have been friends for so long, you just feel like this is about as relaxed and enjoyable as any entertainment situation could possibly be. And you know, Lyle knows, you know all my limitations, and he's always actually sort of encourages me to just go ahead and do what I want to do. And we end up just seemingly having a situation as if we were just sitting around without anybody, without any audience at all. And somehow it translates. And for me, it makes me feel really good because it's what I got into music for in the first place.
And it's a collaboration in that we're both on stage together, but we're taking turns playing, and we, you know, occasionally we'll, I mean, we don't plan the set, and from night to night, it just kind of goes where it goes, so we don't, we may repeat two or three of the same songs from the night before, but not always even. When Robert will play a song, it'll make me think of something to go with it. But if Robert sings a song that I know enough of the words of that I can sing along with it, then I will. And Robert plays with me and sings with me too occasionally. But it's sort of informal. I mean, it's sort of in that kind of unrehearsed way that you would if you were just sitting around. It's just fun to do, and it's kind of my only chance to get to. Robert's so busy with his band, and I go other directions. It's our chance to spend some time together and get to hang out a little bit.
And I like cream in my coffee, and I like to sleep late on Sunday, and nobody knows me like my baby. And I like eggs over easy, flour tortillas, and nobody knows me like my baby. And nobody holds me, and nobody knows me, and nobody knows my baby. But it was a dream made to order, south of the border, and nobody knows me like my baby. And she cried, man, how could you do it? And I swore that there weren't nothing to it. But nobody knows me like my baby. And nobody holds me, like cream in my coffee, and I hate to be alone on Sunday, and nobody knows me like my baby.
I'm Michael Marsalek. I've got Lyle Lovett here and Robert Earl Keen. John, Florida sent me a couple of questions. John also asked the question, you know, what have you learned from each other over the years as your paths have crossed and you've remained friends musically or just as men? What are some things that kind of stay, keep your connection going?
You know, I was drawn to Robert and his thinking and the way he looks at the world from the first time I met him in 1976. And I just enjoyed being with Robert. We spent hours and hours and hours together when we were in school. And we always, found it easy to sort of talk into the night, especially talking about music, but about writing of all kinds. That quality is never changed. If I am looking for clarity on a subject, have any doubt in my mind about anything that I'm dealing with in my life, I can call Robert, and he makes it all make sense for me.
How about you? Do you want to add anything to that?
Well, I'm glad he thinks that I make sense because I feel crazy in my own head. But the amount of things that I've learned from Lyle are infinite. I've learned things about music, just chord changes and sounds. I've learned things about singing. He has an incredible, not only ability to sing a great voice, but he knows how to sing and how to make it live while you're singing the song. And he's truly one of the most engaging people that I've known in my entire life, and his energy is boundless. And so that is something that I always, sort of strive to emulate, because I just appreciate the intellectual curiosity that he has in things, and it's inspirational to me.
This old porch just a big old red and white Herford bull standing under a mesquite tree. Now a dose of Texas, he just keeps on playing hide and seek with that hot August sun. He's sweating and a panting, cause his work is never done. Oh no, he's got them cows and that red top cane. This old porch is just a steaming, greasy plate of enchiladas with lots of cheese and onions and a guacamole salad. You can get them at the LaSalle Hotel in old downtown with iced tea and a waitress who will smile every time. Yes, she will. I left a quarter tip on my $10 bill. This old porch is a palace walk-in on the main street in Texas. It ain't never seen or heard today a GNR in Texas with the 62 poster. It's almost faded down and a screen without a picture since John came to town. Oh no, I love them junior mints and them red hots too. Yes, I do. And old movie pictures.
This is John Floridus. Thanks for listening to part one of the Monday Music Special, an hour-long special edition musicians spotlight with guest host Michael Marsalek, featuring Lyle Lovett and Robert Earl Keen. We'll be back with part two after these messages. This is John Floridus. Welcome to part two of the Monday Music Special. This week, an hour-long special edition musicians spotlight with guest host Michael Marsalek, featuring Lyle Lovett and Robert Earl Keen.
And his head fell behind her as his arm had reached around. Oh, and she looked at the window and she watched the shade go down. It was a private conversation. No one heard her say.
You're listening to Musician Spotlight on Montana Public Radio. I'm Michael Marsalek, the guest host for today. I've got Lyle Lovett here and Robert Earl Keen. I want to ask a question about the changing climate of the music business a little bit. Not get too deep, but I have a couple questions about that. Just in terms of how it's really shifted in terms of how music is bought and sold, certainly how many performers are spending as many days as they always have or more on the road, playing a lot more shows. But in your case, Robert Earl Keen, I think for some bands and some artists, you know, the live albums are either an afterthought or something to capture a tour. You know, you've released 7 live albums, and it seems like the live thing and that experience of the live experience of being in a theater, being in a venue with you and your band has always been part of just something that's super important to you and you're certainly your fans.
I can't really put my finger on it, but that's something that's really common with any person that ever comes to see me. They say, "Oh, I've been listening to you for 10 years and this is the first time I've ever seen it. I wish I had come seen you 10 years ago." So there's a huge difference between how I sound and what I present on record and what we do on stage. And I think it's just because I love being on stage. It's the best 2 or 3 hours of my day every day. And so I guess that just comes across. I just really like being on stage, and I don't really want. I'm not there to waste anybody's time, and you know, do all my high school poetry or any of that business. I just want, you know, I want to get out there and you know, enjoy it, and also, you know, but always mix it up, because there's a lot of people that follow us from gig to gig, so you don't want to be playing the same thing. So we're always playing with different set lists and how we're presenting the music. So. But the flat-out performing is, I just think that it's the best thing, you know, that I could have ever fell into, and I just feel really fortunate on that case right there.
Well, you know, it's fun to play and sing. That's why we played. That's why we started playing and singing when we were in school, and we, you know, we would perform occasionally then. But we sat around at Robert's house on Robert's porch. And we played and sang all the time, and to think, you know, that was, gosh, from 1976 to 2018. To think that we are, treating the stage like Robert's porch and just sitting around playing, playing and singing. I mean, that's I am incredibly grateful for that chance, and it's just kind of hard to believe that all these years later. We've been able to. I mean, there's just not a bigger privilege in the world than being able to make a living doing something you love to do.
A singing boy, pick up that fiddle, and play that steel guitar, and find yourself a lady, and dance right where you are.
I want to ask a question about the changing climate of the music business a little bit. Not get too deep, but I have a couple questions about that. Just in terms of how it's really shifted in terms of how music is bought and sold, certainly how many performers are spending as many days as they always have or more on the road, playing a lot more shows. But in your case, Robert Earl Keen, I think for some bands and some artists, you know, the live albums are either an afterthought or something to capture a tour. You know, you've released 7 live albums, and it seems like the live thing and that experience of the live experience of being in a theater, being in a venue with you and your band has always been part of just something that's super important to you and you're certainly your fans.
I can't really put my finger on it, but that's something that's really common with any person that ever comes to see me. They say, "Oh, I've been listening to you for 10 years and this is the first time I've ever seen it. I wish I had come seen you 10 years ago." So there's a huge difference between how I sound and what I present on record and what we do on stage. And I think it's just because I love being on stage. It's the best 2 or 3 hours of my day every day. And so I guess that just comes across. I just really like being on stage, and I don't really want. I'm not there to waste anybody's time, and you know, do all my high school poetry or any of that business. I just want, you know, I want to get out there and you know, enjoy it, and also, you know, but always mix it up, because there's a lot of people that follow us from gig to gig, so you don't want to be playing the same thing. So we're always playing with different set lists and how we're presenting the music. So, but the flat out performing is I just think that it's the best thing, you know, that I could have ever fell into, and I just feel really fortunate on that bit, on that, you know, in that case right there.
Well, it, you know, it's fun to play and sing. That's why we played. That's why we started playing and singing when we were in school, and we, you know, we would perform occasionally then, but we sat around at Robert's house on Robert's porch, and we played and sang all the time. And to think, you know, that was, gosh, from 1976 to 2018, to think that we are, you know, treating the stage like Robert's porch and just sitting around playing playing and singing. I mean, that's, I am incredibly grateful for that chance, and it's just kind of hard to believe that all these years later we've been able to. I mean, there's just not a bigger privilege in the world than being able to make a living doing something you love to do.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to the Monday Music Special. This week, it's an hour-long special edition Musicians Spotlight with guest host Michael Marsalek, featuring Lyle Lovett and Robert Earl Keen.
It's a busted old town, the plains of West Texas. The drugstore's closed down, the rivers run dry, the semis roll through like stainless steel stallions, going hard, going fast, going wild. Rolling hard, rolling fast, rolling by. And the mission still stands at the edge of the plateau. A stone marks the graves where the old cowboys lie. Asleep in a time, in a town just a youngster, going hard, going fast, going wild. Rolling hard, rolling fast, rolling by.
How about the different climate of how music is bought and consumed and how people listen? Has it changed how you think about making music and writing music as a songwriter? What I mean by that is, you know, often there would be this thought of creating an album for an album's sake. A project has perhaps a track that it'll follow and a theme in many cases, or in the case of a live album, you're capturing a big thing. And people consume music more and more and more, song at a time, single cuts, you know, all on the random play of Spotify or even on the radio. It's really that. So has that changed how you think about making music? Like when you're writing songs or putting songs together, that maybe it's not about that next album as much as it is about capturing a moment in a song that grabs you now and getting it out and getting it on the road. And
have you ever written an album as a concept? I never have. I've just tried to write the next song.
Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you have enough and you start thinking, hey, this would make a great album. And
I asked Guy Clark one time when I first met Guy, and I was sort of ready for the next Guy Clark album. And this was maybe 1985. And I said, well, Guy, when are you going to make a new album? And he looked at me very squarely in the eye, and he said, "As soon as I've got 10 songs that I like." Hmm. And I thought, well, that's how you think about it. So that's the way I've always approached my recordings. Just when I feel like I have enough songs that I want to record, then I'll do
it. And has it changed at all, or do you think it will change how musicians think about music with the way it's being consumed differently?
Well, I can't get away from the idea that a record an LP, the things that we grew up with, regardless of how well it really hangs together as a concept, it's still there together. So I think in terms of 10 songs or 12 songs, and I don't think it's, but there's so many people now that they've never even experienced that. So it has to change. It has to be different because remember they used to talk about EPs maybe in the 90s, and then that kind of went away, and now it's back. Everybody's making an EP, which I assume is four or five songs at a time, and I always feel like that's sort of lazy.
It's like you're releasing half an album.
Yeah, right. But other than that, the whole nature of the business has changed a lot. But it's historically in the music world, it changes pretty much every 20 years, and it really changes hard every 30 years. And I think at this point, since 2007 to now, it's been probably the biggest change since the beginning of the recorded music. Really, I mean, it's just all crazy. And the answer, as far as like what can I do about it, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the worst things you can do to your own creativity is to think too much about the business, because you really do have to write because you want to and just because. You can't help it in a way, and so if you can, success to me has always been has meant being successful enough to be able to continue doing what you want to do, and so I think to think beyond that, there are so many variables and there are so many things beyond your control. You have to think about the things that you can influence, which are your your own playing and singing and songwriting and how you present yourself. Those are the things you can influence. So those are the things to concentrate on. And I'm certainly happy doing that. I'm grateful to be able to, come to Missoula, Montana, and play the Wilma. there's not a better room in the country, and that's it means a lot to me to be able to come back every few years.
I want to ask you about, in this program on Musician Spotlight, I've heard John talk with lots of musicians, and in many of the conversations I've had, it seems like more and more musicians are thinking less and less about genre, about sound, and really just going more into just creating the music that you want to create.
We started that.
You started that. I like that. But even in your most recent bluegrass record, Robert, and certainly in what I would call many kinds of crossover that you've done, Lyle, in your career, lots of different sounds, you still get categorized because of, you need to be in a category for iTunes or even in the record store still. But I think as musicians, do you think about that at all, or just less and less and more about like who the players are, or what the sound you want, or the sound painting you were talking about earlier?
Mm-hmm. I really don't think about it. I just want to sit down and write a song, and then the part that has been good for me in the last few years is I used to be petrified to go into the studio, and I felt intimidated, and it was expensive, and I didn't always know the players that I'm working with, and over the last, I don't know, maybe 15 years, I'm really where I enjoy that as much as anything is going in the studio and working with some really good players. So all you have to do then is go in with a song that you really like, that you feel confident in, and then you start building it from there. As far as like what category it belongs in, I could care less. The bluegrass thing was intentional because I played a lot of bluegrass music when I was young, and I always wanted to do that, and I just got to a point where I did it. But other than that, today the music that I make, it's just the stuff that I've been coming up for forever, the same thing, except for I feel like I do it better because I have a lot more confidence about how to put the music together.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a natural thing for people to want to categorize everything, really. But I agree with you. It seems more and more that people are less loyal to any one category and are willing to listen to a good song, no matter what musical genre it is. I think that's a wonderful thing.
We're recording this in late January of 2018, and the Grammys were last night. And if you look at the categories for, you know, Americana or the very, it's like the genres are very blurred anyway, I would say. And it's very interesting to see how people are just creating new music still. Yeah. I often think sometimes you know, you may have bluegrass instruments or you may have other things that lend themselves to a certain kind of sound. But in the hands of the large band, for example, you know, you can go a completely different direction with anything. And all of a sudden it's an R&B sounding tune, or you've got lots of flexibility with a group like that.
And that's fun to be able to do, just to be able to go any direction, you know, to make the arrangement as big as you can imagine, or then to break the band down and do something really small. That I enjoy that range of being able to do that. But there's something about sitting on stage with one other person and playing essentially solo that it reconnects you with your original thought in writing a song. And there's something about it that you have to, because there are certainly limitations in presenting a song solo, but you know it's really fun to search out little arrangement ideas within a solo performance, whether it's a note choice or a dynamic choice that helps to communicate that song. So it's for me the real fun of all of it is being able to experience performing in different ways. And that's really why I feel like in this show that I'm doing with Robert, I'm in the audience half the time. I get to sit closer than we're sitting right now and listen to my friend Robert play one of his great songs. And that in itself is why I do it.
I stand here at the last filling station by the wind moans a dirge to a coyote's cry, and I'm back in my car and I'm out on the highway going hard, going fast, going wild. While the wind moans a dirge to a coyote's cry, I'm back in my car and I'm out on the highway, going hard, going fast, going wild.
We often talk in radio about the power of the human voice. It's something, and certainly in public broadcasting, we talk about a lot. But in music, that's also such an amazing thing. And there is something about the stripped down, going back to the roots of a singer-songwriter. And you can, I mean, the inflection in the voice and the kind of the mood and passion that you're able to share is different. It's just different than it is with the band, and can be really intimate for people too, I think. And obviously for you guys yourselves.
Well, I agree with Lyle as far as that getting to be part of the audience and watching and listening to Lyle play, because you know, I know Lyle's music backwards and forwards, and still his stuff is so broad and so deep that it, like, every time I hear something different in the song. So, you know, there's not a moment that's not part of being in this one great experience.
Well, I'll close with just a question about kind of the current tour, and I guess a little bit about the future. You've just started this collaborative tour, which you're going on for another month or so now, I think, and a number of cities across the West here in early 2018. This is a kind of a wonderful opportunity, I imagine, in your busy lives to be able to do something like this. What's next for both of you in the sense of, like, where do you go? Do you go back to the larger band tours after this? Are you heading into the studio? What's on the next list? Either in the plan or the wish, I would say.
You're a better planner. You know what you're doing. I don't know what I'm doing, Michael. Lyle knows what he's doing.
You know, over the years, I've played 100 plus dates a year, 100, 110 dates a year. But playing live really is how I've always made a living. I'm still working on Guy Clark's formula of having enough songs that I like to make my next record, and so I'm writing and want to do another studio album, but we'll continue touring the rest of the year. In March, I'll be going out with Sean Colvin, just the two of us, doing a show with her in the East Coast. Back east, and in the summer I'll tour with the large band in August and September.
You still doing TV and film projects occasionally?
You know, occasionally. Okay, I've really enjoyed the little bit of acting that I've gotten to do. It was really all thanks to Robert Altman that other people cast me in anything. But I don't pursue acting the way, you know, I don't work at acting the way an actor would. I mean, if somebody just happens to think of me and wants me to do something, and I can, then I'm excited to do it. But playing music is really what I think of as what I'm supposed to do, and that's what I work at.
Robert, I read 180 dates a year is not unusual for you at times. Are you?
I would say it's more around 130. So, but where that comes from is, like, you know, at 120, 130, it's pushing. You're out. You know, 180, 120 days a year. So it takes up, you know, almost two thirds of your year.
Last question. How do you stay grounded on the road? How do you stay connected to your life beyond music?
I talk to my wife about four times a day. I talk to my girls about four times a day. And other than that, I always have a couple of books that I'm reading, and I play. I mean, on the thing like this is really great because I'm not in a bus full of a whole lot of people, and so I have some guitars out, and I spend a lot of time just practicing.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Lyle?
My wife April and I have been together 20 years, and I think Robert and I both. One reason we're able to feel connected to our lives and grounded in that way, even when we're away from home, is we're both married to people who are supportive of what we do, who understand what we do, and never, ever let us feel disconnected from them or from our lives beyond the bus. That's having that kind of support from home is essential. To be happy and to being connected, but that's really the key, is that support and encouragement that we get.
We'll have links to the websites and more information at our website at mtpr.org. I'm Michael Marsalek. I've been the guest host for today on Musician Spotlight here on Montana Public Radio. Robert Earl Keen and Lyle Lovett. Thanks so much, gentlemen.
Michael, it's nice.
Thank you, Michael.
T for Texas, T for Tennessee.
T for Texas, T for Tennessee.
T for Thelma.
That gal that made a wreck out of me. Thank you.
sure don't have to starve. No, no. If you don't want a mama, you sure don't have to starve. Cause I can get more women than a passenger train can haul.
I'm gonna buy me a pistol just as long as I'm tall. Yes, I'm gonna buy me a pistol long as I'm tall. I'm gonna shoot poor Thelma just to see her jump and fall.
This is John Floridas. You've been listening to the Monday Music Special, tonight featuring an hour-long special edition Musicians Spotlight with Lyle Lovett and Robert Earl Keane. Tonight's guest host has been Michael Marsalek. Special thanks to Logjam Presents for this interview, which was engineered by Beth Ann Austin. This Monday Music Special is a production of Montana Public Radio.